Oh, hello.
Hello.
And welcome to the New York Mystery Machine.
Tamina Hall, Buffa Ghost.
You know, today, as I sit in the studio, being able to breathe a little bit better than I did a month ago, I'm now sitting here with my humidifier directly pointed at me because now that I have the access to the other nostril, it's equally as dry as the right nostril because of the weather. It's
terrible. Their sensitivity to atmospheric fluctuations has just doubled, one might say.
Yeah, so I got this brand new humidifier to...
Can you demonstrate your breathing for us?
It's not going to sound much better because I'm all like congested right now. But
I know, that's the joke. Breathing isn't going to sound...
I can get the air in the left nostril.
Well done.
Which, you know, I went to the surgeon the other day because I'm swollen still and sore still. And I was like, I'm really sore. Like, I'm really, really, really sore. I think something's wrong. And she was like, you're fine. She was like, come see me. And then she was like, this is fine. Like, you're sore and you're swollen. You have a couple more months that you can be this way still.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. Still swollen. Still numb in a few spots. I was numb on the top of my roof of my mouth. And that one day just came back.
Weird.
So, yeah. So here we are, more breathing capabilities than ever before. How are you doing, Christina?
I'm good. Good. I'm good. I'm here. It's rainy out. Tammany got over a cold.
How dare she?
We had someone write in with a theory as to Tammany's name.
That's true.
I do really love the idea that people are looking for Easter egg dropped clues.
The shared
about...
universe that we have now.
I know. So the current going theory is that Tammany's name might be Dakota.
Which is a beautiful name.
Great name. I'm not going to confirm nor deny whether or not her name is Dakota.
Oh, you won't confirm or deny?
Will not confirm nor deny.
Wow. Bold, Christina.
I know.
Very bold.
Let the conspiracy theories continue.
Let them begin.
What is Tammany's name?
What is the name? We're pretty jazzed up here in the studio. And also, unfortunately, Christina delivered some really interesting news to me today that she has a little like eye situation happening.
I do. I have a little eye infection, apparently. The doctor described it as a common cold of the eye, which I didn't know.
But what bothers me most, because you all are thinking one thing that I thought immediately, that she would show up to the studio in a pirate's eye patch, and she did not.
I
almost didn't let her in.
Doctor did not provide.
And not because I didn't want her to like infect me or infect the studio. I just wanted her to have an eye patch on.
I have offered to get my face mask and jerry rig it so that
Tammany Hall but for the ghosts.
Tammany Hall but for the ghosts. This is now how I speak the rest of this episode.
Oh, God, let's see
how it goes.
Please don't.
And what different regions I'm gonna,
is this gonna be the
go
new,
in and out of.
You developed a new character. Aww.
I'm Jenny the Pirate.
Jenny the Pirate?
Or Jenny, remember that's from the Three Penny Opera, I think.
Oh, God, it's terrible. Is this what people think when I do my voices? Oh, no.
You've created a monster,
oh,
Adam.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Well, welcome to the show. Well, we're so excited. Last week was really fun. You know, we told you guys that we had some technical difficulties, and so we had to drop one of our Patreon episodes, which, interesting enough, really worked out because we every now and then we like dropping a Patreon episode so you guys who aren't part of our Patreon community can get
know
a
what
sense,
you're missing.
Yeah, get a sense of like what we do. And one of our current patrons, after that episode, upgraded their membership so they have access to those episodes. So I can only assume it's because you listen to the episode and you're like, I want more of these. So if you want more of those bonus episodes that we had last week, which are only about 30 minutes long, maybe a little less, little pockets of life, and you can listen to them exclusively on Spotify, you can listen to them on the Patreon app. You head on over to patreon.com/nymysterymachine for as little as $3. You join the community, but you don't get those episodes. If you go up to $5, you get a new episode every month. I think we won't have a January exclusive because my surgery took me out for 2 weeks. Christina's technical issues. Christina moved further from the studio, so it's a little harder to like easily come in and record one of those. So, I'm going to try to double up in February for a beginning and an end, but there will be a February drop. So for our patrons, there won't be a January drop. Our apologies. It just, with my surgery and recovery, I actually thought...
You can blame Tammany.
I just, you know, I also thought that when I was recovering from my nose surgery, I was going to have enough... I'll be cognizant enough to have time to do things. I just didn't. Like, I wasn't able to find...
I thought that was ambitious of you.
I wasn't able to find a home for the t-shirts like I thought I was going to do. The most that I did was able to secure our new stickers.
Which, I'm looking at it right now in the back of your computer.
Don't forget yours before you leave today.
Great.
Yeah, we're going to drop those stickers. I'm going to drop them this week on our socials. And if you want to purchase one, you can. You can just DM us and we can make that happen. When we do have a new t-shirt shop lined up, we're going to find a way to integrate the things that we sell here in the studio, as well as the t-shirts, which are out of studio purchases. So, it is our new favorite artwork. I spent so much time on it. It is, I guess I'll just explain it before I drop it, because I'm going to drop it on Monday. Our new sticker is it's Ouija board inspired. Mm-hmm. And it came about because one day I was trying to make a t-shirt for something I said once on the show. I said, no seances, no Ouija boards, no thank you. And so making that shirt, I put a little logo of a Ouija board under it. And I was like, oh, it'd be cool. I like made a custom Ouija board for the show. And then once I made it, I was like, oh, this is its own thing. So the sticker is a little Ouija board with a lot of New York Mystery Machine references, some New York Easter eggs in terms of some numbers. And yeah, we're really excited about them. They are available. They are made. I designed them, but they are made by Stickerfied. So shout out to Stickerfied. If you, for all your sticker needs, head over to stickerfied.com. The guy who runs it is just super sweet. And you guys know the story of these stickers and how they were. This is the third time they've been printed, and he only charged me once for them because
thank you, Stickerfied.
I just never have gotten them. This is the first time I've gotten. So anyway,
they look great. They're my favorite thing you've ever done.
I think they're my favorite thing I've done. They'll be available on social media. The design will be our newest t-shirt when we do relaunch our shirts. We'll also probably throw it on a mug as well. So all some good things here in 2024.
Oh, man.
I think that's all I got. I guess we should just start the show.
What are we doing?
Today we are heading back to the best borough. That's Brooklyn, before you can even think of. And look, just because something is ethnically, linguistically diverse and
the most diverse part on the planet
doesn't make it the best, though. Like,
let it be known here, first and foremost, that Adam Mace doesn't believe in diversity. You heard it here on the podcast.
Dangerous shit. We're heading to Clinton Street in Brooklyn, not to be confused with Clinton Street in Manhattan, not to be confused with Clinton Avenue in Brooklyn. There's a lot of Clintons.
Why are there so many Clintons?
Because DeWitt Clinton, he was a mayor of New York City. And so
that makes sense.
There are spots all over. He was a mayor in the 1800s.
Okay.
So like one of the early
years.
That
makes sense.
So that's why there's a lot of Clintons all over New York. And there's a lot. The neighborhood of Clinton Hill is named after DeWitt Clinton. So now you know. The more you know. I always like teaching you a little bit of New York history.
There you go.
Every now and then I'll say something that you don't know. And it's like, oh, you don't know.
I know.
So today we are heading to Clinton Street in Brooklyn. It's probably in like the cobblestone area of Brooklyn. It's one of the oldest sections of the borough, middle class to upper. Really great neighborhood with a lot of like great culture and great architecture in its buildings. And today we're covering a 4-story house on the 300 block. Now I say the 300 block because the book that I researched this from doesn't give us an exact address. It's in 300 Clinton Street.
Roughly around 300.
So we have about 100 buildings to choose from on Clinton Street. It's actually odd that our author didn't let us know the exact address, because he often does.
Often.
He often, well, who could we be speaking about? Well, you know him. You don't really love him because he's not that great. But he's back on the old New York Mystery Machine podcast, and it is Mr. Hans Holzer.
Ah!
Hans Holzer is back on the show.
Hans Holzer,
today,
yeah.
Today, we are checking out a case that he pointed out in his book, True Encounters with the World Beyond. Now, this whole story is an interesting one from Hans because it was all told to him. He never got an actual opportunity to go to the house, but the people who were victims of this haunting told him in detail what was happening in the house. And so he decided to document it in his book. And so we're going to talk about it all today. And a lot of the narrative today comes directly from Hans and what he heard from those who reported it. And we're going to get into it now. The 4-story home that we're talking about today contained a basement floor, a parlor floor. And then after a few steps up.
I'm sorry, did you go into a discussion of architecture without introducing everyone's favorite New York?
Well, no, because I haven't mentioned what style the building is.
Oh, okay. We can meet on that then. Are you going to mention it?
In literally 1 second?
Great. Okay.
It's
I can wait.
On.
I can wait. I can wait.
The four-story home contained a basement floor, a parlor floor, a few steps up, a third floor, and then a fourth floor above that, which is common in the style that we call brownstone. New York Architecture Podcast. It's the New York Architecture Podcast. Two people who don't understand architecture are reading about it and talking about it on the New York Architecture Podcast.
<It's> beautiful.
I should clip that.
I want you to clip that. And then every time I want you to.
I'll add some weird music behind it.
And just like architecture words. Italianate.
Brownstone. Italianate.
Dutch colonial.
Elizabethan. Roman.
Tudor.
Yeah, it's a brownstone. And if you're familiar, if you've ever been in New York, and particularly in many parts of Brooklyn, including Brooklyn Heights, Cobble Hill, you'll see the buildings known as brownstones. And while we're here, let's talk a little bit about what a brownstone is.
What is a brownstone?
Because we are on the New York City Architecture Podcast. And it's only fitting that we should talk about what they are. Now, brownstone is a brown Triassic Jurassic sandstone that historically used in buildings starting in the 19th century.
So you got some dinosaurs in your brownstone.
From what
is what
sounds
I'm hearing.
Like, you have some dinosaurs. And basically, there are brownstones throughout many of New York's famous neighborhoods, especially in Brooklyn. You can find them in Park Slope, Clinton Hill, Fort Greene, Cobble Hill, Carroll Gardens, Borham Hill, Gowanus, Winslow Terrace, Prospect Heights, Crown Heights, Brooklyn Heights, Bed-Stuy, Sunset Park, and there's also parts of Bay Ridge, Williamsburg, Bushwick, Greenpoint, and Prospect Ledford Gardens that you can see them.
But so all over Brooklyn.
Yeah, and there's also some spots in Manhattan in the Lower East Side and Washington Heights. It's become very popular to use the term brownstone to refer to almost any townhouse from that period when they started. But a traditional brown house does have that style of brownstone. It's very distinct in its structure. And that was a little bit of the Architecture Podcast. Brownstone.
I'm really glad you knew that I needed an outgoing sting as well.
Yeah. The house was more than 100 years old at the time of the events. Mm. Now, when are the events of the story? Well, Hans Holzer also didn't decide to write when those were.
What the hell, Hans?
But given the information presented in the story, given the information presented by the people who had the haunting happen to them, and given the information that Hans has done and the information that I found solo from this, I've deduced that it's early 70s.
Okay.
It makes the most sense in terms of price range. Mm. Housing situations in New York and events around it.
Okay.
That's called investigating journalism, in case you guys don't know. So when people just think that we just sit here and fucking read stories and make shit.
Bullshit.
No. Investigations occur on the New York Mystery Machine and the New York City Architecture Podcast.
It's a little collab we got going.
The little collab between those. The two hosts from that podcast are fucking crazy. Oh, they don't know anything about architecture. But it is pretty odd that Hans Holzer was vague, because he's usually pretty specific on the things he does. But because this didn't contain any seances that he did, there was no timestamp on them. Usually it's very distinct when he goes in for a seance. But like many New York houses, it's also hard to get a sense of who lived where, when lived where, because we know that houses change hands all the time. Mm-hmm. We do know that in the 60s, according to Holzer, the house was owned by some offbeat people, about who little was known. The hall of records he had checked wasn't helped to him, and the owners didn't always live in the house. Mm-hmm. Other people who lived in it weren't necessarily the owners. Sometimes they were tenants, they were friends, all these different things. So all we know is this one account that Hans Holzer gives us about this location in Cobble Hill. Holzer tells us about the top two floors of this Brooklyn brownstone. The third floor contained two bedrooms and a bath, while the fourth floor, or the top floor, consisted of a living room, dining room, kitchen, and second bath. Now, at the time of Hans Holzer's account, the two first floors, the bottom and the one above that, were rented to an architect and his wife. Hmm. I wish we can get him on for the Architecture Podcast.
Truly, what a great guest.
Unfortunately, we can't. The two top floors were open to new tenants. Now, it's the summer, and it's the summer of the early 70s. And two young ladies are in their early 20s who had been living at the Brooklyn YMCA when they first moved to New York, and they finally decided they have enough money to get a place of their own. And somehow, they heard of the two vacant floors on Clinton Street and immediately fell in love with it. They decided to rent the top two floors without hesitation. Now, I said initially, you were at the YMCA in Brooklyn, and then you went to this brownstone in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
How'd you afford
it? How'd you do that?
And then, after really spending some time in the story, I'm like, oh, maybe because it's haunted. Maybe because it couldn't.
Just really drop that price range.
Because the first two floors were like, not vacant for a long time, but those top floors seem to be vacant a lot.
Ah, interesting.
Now, Barbara and Sharon are two gals of the first part of this story. They're 23 years old at the time, still going to college and trying to make ends meet so they can afford this apartment, which they do for the most part. Now, immediately after moving in, they decided to clean up the house, which it needed indeed. It was vacant for a bit, so it really needed some tidying up. The stairway to the top floor was carpeted all the way up, and it was quite a job to vacuum it because there were a lot of because there weren't a lot of outlets along the way. Mm-hmm. So you needed to use an extension cord for the most part. Now, Sharon was vacuuming that day. She got to the top floor and was cleaning it, and she removed the extension cord to plug it in further up so she can get to the next There's like an outlet on the bottom, an outlet on the top. She's like, I gotta go to that one. But instead, she was like, actually, I don't need this extension cord. I'm close enough. So she just used the regular cord of the vacuum, which is about 12 feet long. So all of a sudden, it's plugged in. She's vacuuming, la-da-da. And the plug pulls out of the wall. Okay. Now, it's worth noting that Sharon is convinced that the plug is actually very stern. You know, the outlet was actually very snug. She was able to put it in and having to use the force of a normal outlet and not one of those outlets that go bloop, that fall out. So she was a little confused that it fell out. Mm-hmm. So she realized, so the vacuum turns off. She goes back up. She puts it back in again. When she plugs it back in again, nothing happens. Mm. The vacuum doesn't do anything. So she unplugs it again. Mm-hmm. Plugs it back in and nothing. So then she unplugs it. Then she starts fidgeting with the switch. And then she unplugs it and turns on again. And she realizes that when the plug pulled out, the switch also turned off.
On the vacuum
itself. So she's trying. So as she was putting it in, she thought that it's a power issue.
Right.
But no. Somehow, some way, the plug pulled out and the actual vacuum switched off.
Okay.
She couldn't figure out how it happened, but she had more work to do, so she discontinued. Later, she came downstairs and described the incident to her roommate, and her roommate thought she was out of her mind. Barbara was like, no, that's crazy. It probably pulled out of the wall, and you subconsciously just, or unconsciously just clicked it off.
Yeah.
But she's like, no. And she said, quote, wait till something happens to you. There's something strange about this house. Now, during the next 5 months, the girls would start hearing strange noises all over the house, but they attributed it to the old house settling, or perhaps people living downstairs in the building. After the first 5 months, Sharon's younger brother decided to come for a visit. He was coming in from New Jersey, and he was going to stay with them. He is still in high school, and he liked to listen to music all night, especially when it played as loud as possible.
Well, that's
pleasant.
Deeply inconsiderate.
They were all sitting now, the three of them, in the living room, listening to music and talking, and it was a nice, relaxed evening. All of a sudden, the stereo went off. The music had been rather loud. It was rock and roll music, blasting. At first, they thought they blew the speaker itself. Okay. You know that happens. Too much decibels and all that stuff can blow a speaker. But then, all of a sudden, the hallway light went out. Then, all of a sudden, the kitchen light went out. The immediate thought was perhaps they blew a fuse. Mm-hmm. But we know what happens when you blow a fuse. Everything goes off at the same exact time.
Right.
This was not the case.
Right.
It went music, hallway light, kitchen light.
Weird.
In succession. In any case, Barbara ran down the four flights of stairs in the basement to check. No fuse had been blown. Now, to be on the safe side, she checked them anyway. She switched them on and off to make sure everything was fine. She went back upstairs and asked the others how the electricity was behaving. Mm-hmm. But everything was still off. At this point, Sharon's brother decided to go into the kitchen and try on the lights there. Maybe there was something wrong with the switches. Mm-hmm. He went into the hallway, and there was an old Tiffany-type lamp hanging on the top of the stairway. It had conned off, too, so he tried to turn it on, and nothing happened. He then pulled the cord from the... So he tried the switch in the hallway.
Right. Nothing happened.
He then went and climbed up to pull the actual little chain cord on the lamp, and suddenly it went on. So in other words, the light, the cord, which presumably is on all the time because it's controlled by the switch.
Right.
So the light bulb, you know how it is.
Yeah. And
for some strange reason, that cord got pulled down to turn the actual fixture off.
Weird.
So it wasn't the switches. Once again, it was actually the device itself was turned off.
Weird.
Very weird. This confused him. And not unlike it confused his sister 5 months earlier when the vacuum did the same thing, which he spoke about, mm-hmm. and which Barbara just laughed at her.
Right. Joke's on you, Barbara.
Now, confused and frustrated, he decided to head into the kitchen and grab something to eat. As I would do the same thing. I'm confused and tired. Make me a sandwich. When he came back from the kitchen to join his sister and her roommate, he was white as the wall. Okay. He reported that the kitchen was, quote, as cold as an icebox.
Oh.
But as soon as one left the kitchen, the temperature was normal in the rest of the house. The others got up and went to go see it for themselves, and sure enough, icy cold in the kitchen. And this was despite the fact that there were 4 or 5 radiators going at the same time, and all the windows in the house were closed.
Hmm.
Now, that night, the three began to talk about everything that was happening in the apartment. The noises, the sounds, the strange feelings that they were having, the weird issues with the electricity, and of course, the ice-cold kitchen. That night, they came to the conclusion that this was not normal. In fact, it must be paranormal.
Oh.
So they began to think that perhaps they have a ghost in the house.
Now, you're saying ghost. I'm hearing, per Adam Mays's classic definition of poltergeist.
You know, Christina, I just so appreciate how much you listen to me on the show, because I tend to agree. Because as I've explained many times on the show through various stages of research, ghosts aren't really mischievous. If ghosts are causing mischief, it's for two reasons. It's to be seen or heard because they need to relate mm-hmm. something to you. Mm-hmm. Or it is they don't really know they're dead. So they're just doing their normal actions.
Okay.
Now, so far, this may not be, this couldn't.
This could be one of those things.
This could easily be, hey, see me. I need you to see me. I need you to communicate with me.
Right. Okay.
But it also could be seen as mischief as well.
Okay.
Because if you go back in time, back all the way to season one of the New York Mystery Machine, head on over back there. And one of our early episodes, we talked about Popper the Poltergeist. And Popper the Poltergeist literally would pop little bottles and stuff for no reason at all.
Right.
And it was all mischievous. And it wasn't to be seen. It was just to cause chaos.
Right.
Oftentimes, we'd find out that ghosts, that poltergeist would make believe that they're ghosts. And they would try mm-hmm. to take the identity of loved ones who have passed on in order to trick people to thinking and to trusting them and to letting them run rampant in their home.
Okay, so we're on the fence right now as to where this could be. All right.
We're on the fence right now. Now, they decide to name the ghost Hendrix, as it happened to be the anniversary of Jimi Hendrix's death, and they had been playing some of his records loudly on that stereo that night.
Okay.
Now, soon after the events on this night, on April 1st of that year, an acquaintance named Toby joined the other two girls in the house. It had been relatively quiet between the incident in the kitchen and Toby's move-in date, but somehow, Toby's arrival was also the beginning of a new aspect of the haunting. A week after Toby moved in, she and the girls were in the living room talking. It was about 11 o'clock at night, and they had dimmers on in the living room. Toby was sitting on the couch, and Barbara and some friends were sitting on the other side of the room. And all of a sudden, she felt a chilly breeze pass by her. It didn't touch her, but she felt it nonetheless. Nonetheless. And just then, the light started to dim back and forth. And when she looked up, she actually saw the dial of the dimmer moving by itself.
Ooh.
Now, as of yet, Toby knew nothing about the haunting, so she decided to say nothing to the others, having just moved in and not wishing to have her roommates think she was weird. I'm sorry.
They didn't tell her?
I'm sorry. Girls, you invited someone into your home to live.
That That's
and you
cruel.
Didn't have the courtesy to let them know what was happening.
They really wanted that extra run.
You were the one. Like insanity.
That is so mean.
So mean. So rude. Now, yeah, so mean. Like, how do you not tell someone you're living in a haunted
right?
house?
By the way, Toby, we're so excited to have you move in. It could be haunted, just like FYI.
Just FYI. And maybe I won't.
But anyway,
haunted.
You're half the rent, please.
And also, as part of a future episode, which may be a patron exclusive, actually, wink, wink, technically, in New York City, you have to report you have a haunted house.
At least if you're a realtor.
If you're a realtor, the realtor must.
Yeah, you
must.
Can ask and be like, is this place haunted? And they have to tell you if there have been reports of hauntings.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Now, things continue to escalate night after night, usually after 11 o'clock when the two girls and their friends, usually after 11 o'clock when the three girls and their friends sat around talking. After a couple of weeks, Toby couldn't stand it any longer and finally asked the others whether they could feel anything strange in the room. Barbara looked at Sharon, and a strange look passed between them. Finally, they decided to tell Toby about the haunting and brought her up to date from the beginning. I wish Toby was like, I'm sorry. Did you decide to not tell me anything? How?
Yeah, they probably like brought out the lease at the same moment. Like, no, you already signed.
It's too late, hon.
You can't leave.
But Toby was at least happy to know she wasn't being crazy.
I guess.
Now, almost every day there was something new to report. Cooking equipment would be missing. Clothing would disappear. Windows were open by themselves. Garbage cans would be turned over by unseen hands. And throughout that period, there was the continued walking of an unseen person in the living room, located directly over the third floor bedroom.
I hate that.
The girls heard it at any hour of the night, and once in a while, even during the day. It was someone walking back and forth and back and forth, and they were loud, stomping footprints. Each time, they went upstairs to check on them, but found absolutely nothing. The girls had no doubt had to be a ghost, but they didn't know how to handle it. So Toby offered to look into the matter and perhaps find out what might have occurred at the house at an earlier age. Barbara kept hearing obscure whistling, not a real tune or song that could be recognized, but by a human whistle nevertheless. Meanwhile, Toby heard of a course on witchcraft and the occult being given at NYU and started to take interest in books on the subject. That's how it gets you. That's how it got me. Had ghosts in my apartment, and then like now.
Started Googling.
Ghosts in my house growing up, and now look at me.
You had ghosts in your house growing up.
Yeah, we spoke about this.
I forgot about that.
Episode 1. Talk all about it.
Gotta go back and listen. I forgot about it.
Episode 1. Talk all about the ghost in my house. Yes. So that's how it happened. And then 121 episodes of a podcast later. Whenever there were people over to visit, they stayed in the living room upstairs past 11 o'clock at night, and the ghost would simply run them out of the room with all of the tricks in her ghostly trade.
Oh, wow.
She would turn the stereo on and off or make the lights go on and off as well. I say she because by this time, they were convinced that was a woman. There is literally no reason. They just felt it in their core.
Right.
I think our ghost is a girl. There were heavy shutters from the floor to the ceiling, and frequently it appeared as if the wind were coming through them, and they would clap together as if the breeze were agitating them. Now, I will say it's worth noting that wind on shutters is not a thing. Like, you're an old house, air gets in. That's actually the least ghostly thing that you've said in this episode, that we've talked about in this episode.
Right.
Of all the things, I'm like, I have my windows closed all the time, mm-hmm. and my curtains are always moving.
Yes.
This apartment is pretty not haunted, I'm sure of that, after living in haunted places for a while.
Right.
So, you know, chalk that.
It's just what happened.
If we're going to, as always on the show, we do our best to debunk what we can debunk easily, and I'll debunk that easily.
Yeah.
Now, no one had actually seen this ghost. That June, however, Bruce, Toby's boyfriend, decided to move into the house with her. I assume Toby told Bruce about the ghost. But maybe not.
I would like to believe that she had the courtesy.
Bruce and Toby had the main bedroom, and off of the bedroom was a bathroom. Since Barbara would frequently walk through in the middle of the night, they left the light in the bathroom so she would not trip over anything as she walked through the hall. Mm. That particular night in June, Toby and her boyfriend were in bed, and she was looking up. But not at the ceiling. She was looking up at the wall when suddenly she saw a girl looking at her.
Oh, I hate it.
Yeah, she hates it. She hates it, everybody. She hates it. Christina hates it. It was just like an outline, like a shadow on the wall. But Toby could tell that this being had long hair and almost braids. Somehow, she had the impression that maybe perhaps she was a Native American girl because of the braids. Toby. Toby.
Toby.
Toby.
I know it's the 70s.
But come
Toby.
On. Other people have braids who aren't Native American girls. Come on. Toby looked up and called the apparition to her boyfriend's attention, but by the time that he had looked at it, she was gone. She told Bruce what she saw, and he simply didn't believe her, saying that you're seeing things, mm-hmm. shadows on the wall, the light, all that jazz, mm-hmm. classic mm-hmm. things. And instead, he asked Toby to go upstairs to the kitchen and make him a sandwich.
What?
Bruce, I think I saw her ghost. I don't give a shit. Go make me a sandwich. Who is this person? Toby, you deserve better. You're yeah. scared and
new
you make
friends,
and you're making
boyfriend.
And you're making you, your friend didn't tell you about a ghost. Your boyfriend doesn't believe you and makes you go alone to make you a, right. make him a sandwich.
I think this place
make
is
your own sandwich, Bruce. You know where the bread is. Still had the jury's still out on people like me screaming on the podcast.
I think we have to assume
the jury's still out
that they do.
Now, Toby wasn't upstairs for more than 5 or 6 minutes when she returned to the bedroom and found Bruce hidden under the covers of the bed.
Serves you right.
Yeah, she came in with her sandwich. She's like, what are you doing? When she asked him what was wrong, he would shake his head. And so she looked around the room, but found nothing. The only thing she noticed was that the bathroom was now wide open. Mm. She assumed that her boyfriend had gone to the bathroom, but he shook his head and told her that he had not. He had just been lying there smoking a cigarette when all of a sudden he saw the handle of the door turn by itself and the door then open. When he saw that, he simply dove under the covers until Toby returned. From that moment on, he no longer laughed at her stories about the house ghost.
I bet.
The following night, her boyfriend was asleep again when Toby woke up at 2 a.m. The television set had been left on, and when she went to shut it off, she got back into bed and happened to glance up at that same place she had before. On the wall, she had seen that apparition, and for a moment or two, she saw the same outline of the girl. Only this time, she had the impression that the girl was smiling at her.
Oh, I hate that.
Well, 2 weeks after that, Toby and her boyfriend broke up.
Okay.
And this rather shook her. So she had come back to home one day and didn't know that he had left, and found just a note explaining the reasons for leaving.
Damn.
And that he would get in touch with her later. And this upset her very much.
Were the reasons your...
You have a
place
ghost.
Is haunted,
and
I can't
also
deal.
Subpar sandwich. That's the reason I would break up with somebody.
That's fair.
It upset Toby so much that her roommates were trying to calm her down the entire time. And finally, the two girls, after trying to console her, went back upstairs to their own rooms. And Toby was lying in the bed trying to compose herself. And that night, something incredibly strange and frightening happened. And we'll get into it
Ooh.
After the break. The New York Mystery Machine is brought to you in part by listeners like you.
That's right. Head on over to our Patreon, and for as little as $3 a month, you can help keep the pod growing.
By joining, you can access a whole bunch of cool stuff, such as mini episodes, swag, exclusive playlists, and more.
Head to www.patreon.com/NYMysteryMachine to find out more and become a patron.
That's www.patreon.com/NYMysteryMachine and join our ever-growing community today. Okay, we are back, and poor Toby. Just got dumbed via a note.
Via note.
Subpar sandwich.
In her haunted
house.
Had her sandwich making skills insulted.
This poor girl.
I bet you make a great sandwich, Toby.
Toby, we love you. If you're still out there, you hit us up.
Yeah.
This is the 70s. You're probably still kicking it.
Yeah, you're what, 20 in the 70s? That's 50 years ago. You're probably, what, 77? Yeah. Toby,
come on the show, Toby. We'll make you sandwiches. Ooh, good sandwiches.
We're serious about sandwiches here on the New York Mystery Machine.
I mean, Christian would beg to differ.
Shh.
So Toby is in the room trying to compose herself, lying on the bed. And in the quiet of the room that night, she suddenly hears someone sob a little. And then a voice says, Toby.
Yeah.
Toby got up from the bed and went to the bottom of the stairs and called up, demanding to know what Barbara wanted, thinking Barbara was just calling her. But no one had called her. She went back to the room and laid down again. Just then, she heard a voice saying, Toby, over and over again. On checking, she found that no one was there to call her. Well, no one with a physical body, that is. Toby realized who had been calling her. It must have been Hendrix the ghost. And so, in a quiet voice, Toby said, Henny, did you call me? Because she called her Henny for short. Mm-hmm. And then she heard the voice answer, calm down. Don't take it so hard. It'll be all right. It was most certainly a girl's voice. And there was still no one to be seen. The time was about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And since it was June, the room was fairly light. And yet a voice came out of nowhere. Toby had hardly recovered from this experience when still another event took place. Sharon had moved out and another girl by the name of Madeline had moved in her place. We broke up the original team. You hate to see it.
Yeah.
One day, Madeline's brother came to visit from Chicago. And he had brought a friend along who had some experience in the spiritual nature as well, getting a sense of the paranormal. His name is Joey, and both boys were about 20, 21 years old. Madeline and her brother and his friend were interested in the occult, and they brought a Ouija board into the house.
What are you doing?
No seances, no Ouija boards, no thank you.
No thank you.
There'll be a t-shirt on the new site, we promise. On Saturday, December 19th, while it was snowing outside and the atmosphere was just right for a seance, they decided to make contact with the ghost of Henny. They went upstairs into the living room and sat down with the board. At first, it was going to be a game and they were just going to ask some silly questions, like who's going to marry who and other silly romantic and sex stuff. But halfway through the session, they decided to try to contact the ghost in earnest. The three girls, Madeline's brother and his friend, sat down with their knees touching and put the board on top. Then they invited Henny to appear and talk with them if she felt so inclined. They were prepared to pick up the indicator and place their hands on it so it could move to the various places on the board, as you do with a Ouija board. For those who don't know, traditionally, the Ouija board, you place your fingertips on it and allow the spirit to move the indicator to all the letters and the numbers. However, before their hands ever touched it, the indicator took off by itself.
Ooh.
It shot over to the word yes on the board, as if to reassure them that communication was indeed desired. The four of them looked at each other, dumbfounded, for they had seen only too clearly what just transpired. The indicator just moved by itself with no hands on it at all.
I hate that.
Well, especially because we know most times if you ever played with a Ouija board as a kid, someone was
moving it.
And someone was always moving it. Like some kid's always moving it.
Yeah.
Because if that's the case, I should have been an astronaut. Because the Ouija board told me.
I didn't know this story. This alternate universe where you not only were an astronaut but played with Ouija boards.
I was at one party, I think, when I was younger, before I even had any sense of the paranormal. Mm-hmm. And there was a Ouija board. And it was so evident that people were moving it. Like so much where everyone I remember the group of people I was with. And we knew one person was moving it specifically, and so we all non-verbally made the decision to lift our hands up so that we can catch them pushing it, and we did. And they're like, oh my gosh, that wasn't me, you guys. That was the ghost. I'm like, no. So we did not make any contact that evening, trust. But don't do it. No seances, no Ouija boards, no thank you. The five of them looked at each other, dumbfounded. But now, they were just kind of scared. But Toby decided that since she was the person firstly interested in psychic research, because his experiences made her very interested in all of it, and also the one who Henny had been speaking to prior, she was going to be the one to ask the questions. So she began asking why Henny was still attached to the house. Henny would go word for word, spelling out her reply and spelling out each and every letter to her sad story.
Yikes.
It was a slow process.
Yeah.
Every word spelled letter by letter. But the group didn't mind the passage of time. They wanted to know why Henny was with them, and they were determined to get the full story. So it appeared that the house once belonged to her father, who was a medical doctor. Her name was Kessa Rist, and she had been living in the house with her family. Unfortunately, she had fallen in love with a young man and became pregnant by him. She wanted to marry him and have the baby, but her father would not allow it and forced her to have an abortion. He did it in the house himself, and she died during it.
Mm.
Her body was taken to Denver, Colorado, and buried in the family plot. She realized her boyfriend was also dead because all this happened a long time ago. She realized during the Ouija board experiment that her boyfriend is also dead now because all this has happened years ago. Her reasons for staying in the house were to find help. She wanted her remains to be buried near her lovers in New York.
Hmm.
Quote, "Do you like the people who live here?" Toby asked. "Yes," replied Henny. "Is anyone who lives here ever in any danger?" "Yes."
"Oh,"
Toby responded. "People who kill babies."
Oh.
Now this struck the young people, particularly because of a close friend who wasn't there at the time had just had an abortion.
Huh.
Toby continued. "Will you appear to us?" "Kessa has," the ghost replied, which makes me believe that she refers to herself in the third person like The Rock, which is like bold as shit. I dig it. Or she's talking about someone else and that's not Henny.
Oh,
so who knows? Yeah. There's some. And we know from a lot of the seance episodes on the podcast, there is a lot of information overload that feels like they don't connect in these seances quite often. Like so often we have to dilute some of the information and weave a story.
Right.
So either she's talking to herself in third person or there's another person that she's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, after she says Kessa has, suddenly there appeared to be a shadow of a cross on the kitchen wall. And there was really no source for that.
Mm.
Except, of course, you know, from thin air.
Hmm.
The girls realized they did not have the means to go to Denver to exhume Kessa's remain and bring her to New York. And they told her that as much. "Is there anything else we can do to help you?" they asked. And this I don't believe. This I believe Hans Holzer is being Hans Holzer-y in the story.
Okay.
For he writes that the ghost of Henny responded, "Contact Holzer."
Oh my gosh.
Hans. Hans, like, it's not enough that you are pretty egotistical.
Yeah.
We could safely assume that people have heard of you at this time.
Mm-hmm.
To say that the ghost knows you by name,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's a little bold.
He's the talk of the other world.
So like always on this show, we are nothing but straight shooters. I call bullshit on this
I call
one.
Bullshit.
I think this is a little bit of Hans Holzer being a little egotistical.
Yeah.
Now, by this time, of course, Toby had become familiar with Hans Holzer's works because she was looking into paranormal phenomenon and the psychological senses of it, meaning that he's gotten into his work as well as the mediums that he has worked with,
and sure,
which were a few, many of which you covered. In fact, we'll put in the show notes all the other appearances of Hans Holzer on the show, so you can, if you want to hear more Hans Holzer stuff, you know where to go.
You know where to go.
Toby, becoming familiar with Hans's works, decided to sit down and write Hans a letter, telling him of their problem. They stopped the Ouija board exercise and didn't do anything else that night because they were all very shaken up by all of
it. Yeah, that's fair.
On Monday, Toby would type up the letter and send it out to Hans. Now, since they were not sure if the letter would even reach Hans, they decided to also do some independent checking concerning the background of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And if possible, try to locate a record of Kessa Rist. But they were unsuccessful.
Can I ask, how are you spelling Kessa Rist?
C-E-S-A space R-I-S-T.
Curious if I could find her on Ancestry.
And what did it come up with?
Well, first I have to spell her name right. There's a Cecilia Rist, not in Brooklyn. This could take me a while. This may not be the best.
Do you know what we'll do?
Mm.
We'll follow up in June.
Yeah, we will. There's a Celia Rust who lived in 1930 in Brooklyn. We'll follow up in June.
We'll follow up in June. I did a quick Google search. I couldn't find her.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like always, like many of these cases, records were really bad.
Yeah, this is
before the 20th century.
Yeah.
We learn that all the time. Records are really bad. Like sometimes there's a fire that burns down a place and we can't find any information on it but some testimonies.
Yep.
That is the research song. So they tried finding some information. They were unsuccessful. Because they're almost certain that the events happening to her probably transpired at a time when records were just not kept or properly kept. And
right.
As per the song I just said.
I was going to say, you could insert the research song here.
As per the research song, it's really hard sometimes to... Oral tradition and oral history and oral accounts last longer than actual documented accounts sometimes,
yeah.
Which is kind of annoying and crazy because... There's a lot of room for doubt in that, of course, but you know, there's a lot of room for doubt in all the paranormal. So I think it's just fine.
Agreed.
I think it's just fine.
And if Adam Seth is fine.
Well, when Hans received the letter, he was about to leave for Europe and he would be there for about 2.5 months. So he wrote back asking the girls to keep in touch with him. And after he returned, he would look into the matter. After Toby had spoken to Hans on the phone, she went back to the living room and sat down quietly. She then addressed Henny and told her that she had contacted Hans and that it would be a couple of months before he can come to the house because he needed to go to Europe. I've got a weird amount of feedback in my headset, you guys.
Hate that, honestly.
I just had to unplug my microphone and replug it in. It was really weird. It's never happened before, especially with the new stuff. This is the first time with all the new equipment I've gotten feedback. It's fine. The studio's not haunted. The holy water is over there. Now, Barbara decided to not wait for Hans. And one night, decided to go upstairs to talk to Henny directly. She explained the situation and asked why she was still hanging around the house. She explained that the agony that was keeping her in her house, she has to just let it go in order to join her boyfriend in the great beyond. Mm-hmm. Above all, she should not be angry with them because it was their home now. And by making all the sounds, turning things off, kind of alienating their lives, they were indeed... adding stress to their lives, and they didn't think they deserved that, and that the best for all the parties is that Henny moves on,
right,
and finds her happiness in the great beyond. Somehow, Barbara felt that the ghost understood, and nothing happened, nothing frightening at all. Relieved, Barbara sat down in the chair facing the couch. She was just sitting there smoking a cigarette, wondering whether Henny really existed, or whether perhaps she was talking to thin air. At that moment, an ethereal form entered the room and stood next to the couch. It looked as if she was leaning on the arm of the couch or holding on to the side of it. She saw the outline of the head and looked like braids around the front to her chest. For about a half a minute, she was there, and suddenly she disappeared. It looked to Barbara as if the girl had been about 5'4", weighing perhaps 120 pounds. Stunned, Barbara sat there for another 10 or 15 minutes, trying to believe what she had just seen. She smoked another 5 cigarettes and then walked downstairs to try to go to sleep. But sleep would not come. She just kept thinking about her experience.
5 cigarettes in 10-ish minutes. Yeah, I was going to say, that's like...
Oh, boy. That's the stuff. Oh, God.
You got a new character, too, today. It's Barbara.
It's Barbara. I'm chain smoking here. It's Robert or Harvey Firestein, one of the two. I'm chain smoking here. Lord. At the time Sharon had left, initially, they were interviewing potential roommates to replace her. Now, one particularly unpleasant girl had come over and fallen in love with the house, but Barbara and Toby didn't want her to move in. This is, that room would eventually go to Madeline. However, that girl was very hell-bent on joining them. So Toby decided to tell her about the ghost. She hoped it would stop the girl from moving in. So as Toby talked about their various experiences with Henny, the would-be roommate became more and more nervous.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, there was a loud crash in the kitchen.
Ooh.
And they went to check on it. The garbage can had turned itself over and the garbage was spilled out all over the kitchen, even though no one had been near it. The new girl took one look at this and ran out as fast as she could and never came back.
That was the correct way to go about it, for the record.
Oh, you know. Christina knows. What do? You get the fuck out. Shortly after, Toby would go on vacation to California, falling in love with the state. There, she would make arrangements to move and found employment in the market research department of a large department store. Under the circumstances, the girls decided to not renew the lease, which was up in July, but rather move to another apartment for a short period. That September, they all moved to California. Under the circumstances, they did not contact Hans Holzer any further, and he had assumed that somehow the matter had been straightened out or that had been a change in their plans. It was not until a year later that somehow they all met in California. And upon meeting, they told him the story, and he decided to take it and put it in his book.
And the rest was history.
On the last day of the woman's stay at the house in Clinton Street, with the movers going in and out of the house, Toby went back into the house for one more look to say goodbye to Henny. She went up to the living room, said a simple goodbye, and hoped Henny would be all right. But there was no answer, no feeling of a presence even. For a while, the house stood empty. Then it was eventually purchased by the father of an acquaintance of the girls. His name was Alan. Through Alan, they heard of the new people who had just moved in after the house was sold. One day, when they had just been in the house for a few days, they returned to what they assumed to be an empty house. They found, however, the kitchen flooded with water. There were 2 inches of water throughout the kitchen. Yet they knew they had not left any water taps on. Why had Henny turned the water and let it run? Perhaps she didn't like the new tenants after all. But she had little choice. After all, she was a ghost who chose not to leave the house. And being bound by the house, she was going to stay in it. The girls never reported anything else happening to them after their move. Henny seemed to remain in Brooklyn and they in California.
Wow.
And that is all we can say about Henny from the block. Don't be fooled by the sounds this house got. She's still Henny from the block. Once she had a body, now she does not. She's still Henny from the block. Satisfied.
Henny.
And there you have it. Henny from the block.
Henny from the block. And we don't know where this house is. So if you happen to be living in that house, let us know if you got a Henny in there.
It's a brownstone in the 300s on Clinton Street in Cobble Hill.
So if you know someone
living
there,
it's pretty specific.
Go knock on people's doors.
Knock on some doors.
Do you have a ghost?
Do you have a ghost?
Is her name Henny?
Is her name Henny from the block?
Does she dislike your boyfriend and sandwiches?
No one dislikes sandwiches.
We don't know. Maybe Henny doesn't like sandwiches. She does a lot of stuff in the kitchen.
That's fair. Well, if you have any theories, ideas, you know what to do. Head over to our social medias at NY Mystery Machine on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, at NY Mysteries on X, and leave us some of your thoughts. You can also email us thoughts at nymysterymachine@gmail.com. It's worth noting. As we hit January, we're you know, not too far from June. And in June, we do our season finale and we talk about all of your theories. So start getting those theories in. Send us your emails. Whenever you email us a theory or an idea, we always document it and we put them into a document. And at the end of the year, we talk about your theories. We talk about stuff that we found. And so now's the time that we start putting those together. So as you listen to the episodes, you have any ideas, any thoughts, hit us up. Be sure to head on to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, and drop us 5 stars. If you're on Audible or Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave us a review. If you leave us a review, we'll read it on the air because we're so appreciative of the kind words that you all say. We love them so much. New merchandise is coming out real soon. I'm working on that this week, and we'll have some of those open. And that is it. We're back all new next week with another episode of the New York Mystery Machine. I've been Adam Ace.
I've been Christina Marinelli.
And thank you ever so much for taking a ride on the New York Mystery Machine.
Time to haul, bad for ghosts. Arrgh.